Welcome to the Delmarva Almanac. Each week, we connect you to the best of Delmarva. I'm your host, Dana Kester McCabe. This week, we'll hear the story of Thomas Savage, one of Delmarva's first American dreamers. We'll get ready for summer with Chef Gretchen Hansen's story about two essential summer foods, and Jim Rapp will tell us everything we ever needed to know about crabs. But first, we'll get the lowdown on all the cultural events happening this summer here on Delmarva with our summer preview. Get out a pencil and jot down the events that sound interesting, and then visit our website for details so you can put them on your calendar. Here we go. The Mosley Gallery at UMES will host the Delmarva Metalworks exhibit June 23rd through the end of July, showcasing local artisans working in metal to create utilitarian and decorative pieces. The weekend of June 25th and 26th is Arts Alive at Northside Park in Ocean City, with 100 artists displaying their works, live music, and free art activities for the kids. All through June, see a plein air wet paint sale and artist garden exhibit at the Kent Island Federation of the Arts in Stevensville. Two other plein air events where you can watch artists working outdoors and then buy their finished works are Plein Air Easton on July 9th through the 17th. In its 12th year, it's considered one of the largest and most prestigious juried plein air painting competitions in the United States. And August 11th through the 14th, artists will take to the boardwalk, streets, harbors, and marshes to paint Ocean City. To see their finished work, head over to the Ocean City Center for the Arts at 94th Street. Every 3 years, the Biggs Museum in Dover hosts a competition of the finest photographers from across the mid-Atlantic states. Check out this year's winners during their exhibit, which lasts through July. Be sure to also check out our website for a variety of art classes and workshops for artists of all ages and skill levels. If you're looking for live theater, there are plenty of performances scheduled all summer. Shrek the Musical will be presented at the Everett Theater in Middletown, Delaware, starting June 10th. The Community Players of Salisbury are putting on Mary Poppins during the last 2 weekends of June at the Wicomico High School Auditorium in Salisbury. Clear Space Theater in Rehoboth will have shows throughout the season, including a live production of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and the Broadway musical Chicago. Brown Box Theater will bring the drama Brilliant Traces to venues all around the peninsula. The Second Street Players will present Drop Dead July 22nd through the 24th at their theater in Milford. August 4th, the Misako Ballet Company will dance at the Ocean City Performing Arts Center. And all summer long at the Milton Theater, you can see stand-up comedy, theater productions, and more. There is no lack of good music on the shore this summer either. June 12th is the 2016 Brewgrass Festival, celebrating local artisan beers and live bluegrass music at Bicentennial Park in downtown Milford. June 16th through the 19th is the now famous Firefly Music Festival at the Dover Speedway. Headliners will include the Kings of Leon, Florence and the Machine, and Mumford & Sons. June 2nd, at First Saturday in Salisbury, enjoy the unique and wonderful folk music of the Zen Monkeys. Or head down to Virginia. In Chincoteague, you'll find regular coffee houses and dockside concerts. In Belhaven, there are concerts regularly at the Eastern Shore's own Arts Center, and in Cape Charles, they have free concerts in their park. As a matter of fact, there are free community concerts in many towns across the peninsula throughout the summer. In Salisbury, the community band holds concerts at the park bandstand Sunday evenings. Other towns with weekly entertainment at their bandstands include Bethany and Rehoboth Beaches. In Ocean City, there are free concerts at Northside Park on Sunday nights and downtown at Sunset Park on Thursday evenings. What would summer be without our country fairs and festivals? The 2016 Hebron Fireman's Carnival is a Delmarva favorite for its rides and food. It opened for the season in May and will be open again the last weekend in June and the first week of July. On June 11th and 12th, Lavender Fields at Warrington Manor in Milton, Delaware will host the Delmarva Lavender Festival. See beautiful gardens, demonstrations, artisan crafts, handmade soaps, and more. July 20th is the 40th annual J. Miller Taw's Crab and Clam Bake at Summers Cove Marina in Crisfield. This quintessential Delmarva event features delicious local seafood and draws a large crowd, including just about every politician running for office statewide in Maryland. Don't forget, you'll need to buy your tickets ahead of time if you want to get in. If you like country fairs with all the trimmings, including a midway carnival and big-name country music acts, head to the Delaware State Fair, July 21st through the 30th, in Harrington. For a more down-home experience, August 5th through the 7th is the Worcester County Fair at Bird Park in Snow Hill. Both fairs will have farm exhibits and 4-H competitions, carnival rides, concerts, and more. July 22nd through the 24th is the annual Chincoteague Island Blueberry Festival, which is followed the next week by their annual Volunteer Firemen's Carnival and the world-famous Pony Swim and Penning. There are two big sea glass festivals bookending the summer season. At the beginning of the summer, it's the Mid-Atlantic Sea Glass and Coastal Arts Festival, June 25th at Cape May Lewis Ferry Terminal in Lewis. At the end of the summer, August 26th and 27th, it's the annual North American Sea Glass Festival at the Ocean City Convention Center. These events include artisans' work, craft demonstrations, sea glass shard appraisals, and competitions. If you'd like to learn something about our local heritage, on June 18th, head to the Academy Art Museum in Easton for the Juneteenth celebration. It's inspired by the Ruth Starr Rose exhibition, Revelations of African American Life in Maryland and the World. Many towns have guided heritage tours throughout the summer season, such as those in Rehoboth Beach, Ocean City, and Dover. And Chesapeake Ghost Walk tours are held around the peninsula all summer long for a fun and spooky history lesson. Saturday, June 26th is the annual African American Festival at Legislative Mall in Dover. And all through July, the Historical Society of Kent County at the Bordley History Center in Chestertown asks, "Are you ready for a tea party?" with their exhibit on the history of tea. Everything you wanted to know about tea but were afraid to ask. Well, that's it for our summer preview. It's just a preview because actually there are many, many other fun and enriching events happening all summer long here on the Eastern Shore. Find links and details for most of them on our website, delmarvaalmanac.com/events. And now for some Delmarva dates with history for this time period. On June 7, 1775, a mass meeting was held in Snow Hill, Maryland, where a set of resolutions was written to support the common rights they held with their rebelling brethren in Massachusetts, experiencing the tyranny of the crown. And more than 100 years prior to that, on June 2, 1608, Captain John Smith left the fort at Cape Henry, Virginia, to begin his exploration of the Chesapeake Bay. And that brings us to this story from our archives about an extraordinary young man's adventures in the southernmost region of Delmarva. Thomas Savage was just 13 when he sailed from England in 1607 for the Jamestown colony with Captain Christopher Newport. Some accounts suggest that Thomas was passed off as the son of King James I. Others represented him as Captain Newport's son. There is actually no record of where Thomas came from or who his parents actually were. In those days, children were often indentured by that early age. Young people without any prospects could go to county fairs to look for work and sign service contracts for a year or longer. Those wanting to emigrate to the New World usually signed up for a 7-year stint to work off their passage. Thomas started out his journey expecting to be a laborer in the new colony. But the captain recognized his intelligence and presumably an amiable and thoughtful personality. Once they arrived at Jamestown, Virginia, Captain Newport joined Captain John Smith on a trade mission with the local native tribes. Thomas Savage was given, along with other gifts, to Chief Powhatan, who reciprocated with a bushel bag of beans and his own young servant, Namantak. Apparently, this type of exchange had become a common practice. The boys were to be taught their host's language so they could serve as interpreters and spies. Imagine the conversation that must have taken place when Captain Newport talked Thomas into this job. Maybe he thought it would be a great adventure. Thomas turned out to be well suited to the task before him. Powhatan himself developed great affection for Thomas and took a special interest in him. He became quite adept at his new language and before long was in great demand whenever there were negotiations between the colonists and the local tribes. When the famous princess Pocahontas was ransomed by the English in 1613, It was 19-year-old Thomas Savage who served as interpreter to her brothers. Captain John Smith credited him as indispensable in the talks that brought an end to the First Anglo-Powhatan War and allowed the marriage of Pocahontas to John Rolfe. Thomas's life was not without its trials. Some of Powhatan's family did not appreciate this interloper. To avoid growing danger, Thomas left the tribe to return to Jamestown. Unfortunately, once there, he was never really seen as fully English or fully trustworthy. But his skill as an interpreter kept him busy nonetheless. Before long, Thomas was sent on trade missions throughout the region. One such trip brought him to what is now the eastern shore of Virginia. Life for the native people here on Delmarva, particularly down on its southernmost tip, was considerably better than that of their counterparts across the Chesapeake and Jamestown. Farming was easier here, and there was more than enough small game and fishing even when there was a harsh winter or dry growing season. Surplus food stores were traded to the Jamestown settlers for metal tools and trinkets. Thomas facilitated several exchanges with Deb Divan, the Emperor of the Eastern Shore, who was also known as the Laughing King of the Accomacs and the Nassawadocks. Trade was very profitable for Deb Divan, and he, like Powhatan, became good friends with Thomas Savage as a result. The Laughing King's affection was so great that he gave Thomas a large tract of land in Northampton County, which is still known as Savage's Neck. In 1622, relationships across the bay, however, were not so good. Powhatan's successor, Opechancano, was plotting an attack on Jamestown. He sent word to Deb Divan that he wanted him to send certain poisonous plants that grew here on the eastern shore to use against the settlement. Instead, Deb Divan warned Thomas, who warned the other colonists of an imminent threat. Jamestown Governor Sir Francis Wyatt ignored this, and sadly, on March 22, 1622, Opechancano led the slaughter of over 300 people in Jamestown, initiating a war that lasted a decade. Thomas's interpreting services were in even higher demand for military purposes. Soon, various English leaders were vying to have Thomas work exclusively for them. When Thomas declined a request made by Virginia Governor George Yeardley's aide, Captain William Epps, he was convicted of a trumped-up charge of slander. His sentence was to work exclusively for Yeardley and Epps for a minimum of 5 years. Thomas was made the official translator for the Accomac region, but was forbidden to even speak with the native peoples there, except when following the governor's instructions. All the work Thomas did for them, and even prior to this, was done out of his obligation of servitude. He was never paid. By 1627, Governor Yeardley had died, and Captain Epps departed permanently for the West Indies, releasing Thomas from his bonds. Now, at the age of 33, he and his wife were free to make a life together on colonial Virginia's eastern shore. 4 years earlier, Thomas had married an English girl named Hannah. She must have been a remarkable young woman. She had come to the colony by herself, having paid for her own passage. In those days, it was highly unusual for any female to have the resources and autonomy to undertake such an adventure. It's no wonder that two such unique people would find each other. They had one son named John. Sadly, Thomas did not live to see the age of 40. The accounts that I have found do not say what happened to him, just that he was dead by September 1633. Just the same, he had accomplished a great deal for someone so young. He had served his community with his invaluable translating skills. And Thomas Savage turned a life of hardship into a prosperous adventure. He is believed to have been the first permanent English settler on Virginia's eastern shore, and therefore one of Delmarva's first American dreamers. It's time for a break now. When we come back, Chef Gretchen Hansen will tell us about two essential summer foods, and Jim Rapp will help us learn everything we need to know about crabs. Did you know that according to the USDA, 14% of American households did not have a sufficient quantity of affordable, nutritious food for at least part of 2014? Please consider giving generously to your local food bank regularly throughout the year. Visit our website for links for your state, delmarvaalmanac.com/hunger. Welcome back to the Delmarva Almanac. Here's Executive Chef Gretchen Hansen of Hobos in Rehoboth Beach to tell us about two summer essentials, corn and chicken.
In June, the tiny little shoots of corn peek out from the barren spring ground. The farmers aboard their tractors lumber slowly from one field to the next, while people in their out-of-state automobiles wait impatiently for them to pull aside. Farming is in the blood here. Generation after generation work the land and grow the corn that their great-great-grandfathers did before them. Even if your family does not work the land, you are close to someone who does. We are such a tiny state that there is ever only 2 degrees of separation between any of us. That farmer on the tractor probably has about 150 mutual friends on Facebook with me, and I'll bet you anything he has our senator on speed dial as well. When I was an impatient New Yorker, I might have sped past him. Not now. My livelihood depends on his in the most immediate of ways. Corn does not grow wild anywhere in the world, and opinions differ as to whether it was a spontaneous evolution or through human intervention. The Native Americans were the first to cultivate corn, and the early European settlers relied on the native corn as an essential dietary staple. Without the Nanticokes sharing their knowledge, the history of the European expansion would have had a very different historical trajectory. The corn of the Native Americans was an entirely different strain than what we now enjoy, but the Nanticoke used every part of the plant, from green kernels to dry kernels to stalks and husks. Flint corn, or field corn, that we use for feed or hominy, as well as the multicolored corn we see decorating the harvest table, is far closer to the original than the sweet corn we enjoy today. Thanks to a whole bunch of Quakers brought here by the promise of religious freedom, Delaware's commercial grain industry was born. Soft red wheat was the first major cash crop, and the revolution of flour milling from the automated grist mill by Oliver Evans made Delaware an agricultural heavyweight. Mills had not advanced technologically much since the Middle Ages, and by virtue of Evans' invention, mills were suddenly capable of being operated by only one person. Interestingly enough, the automated grist mill was one of the first patents granted in the United States, and that patent was signed by our new president, George Washington. The modern poultry industry has its origins with Cecil Still from Ocean View. She was shipped 500 rather than her regular 50 peeps on Easter 1923, and she expanded her broiler business by using larger houses to raise her birds. Today, poultry production is the economic cornerstone of the entire Delmarva Peninsula, and Sussex County is the number one county in the United States for poultry production. Not only has poultry become a focus of Eastern Shore culinary arts, immigration to the region has had a huge impact on exposure to spices, regional cuisines, and the intermarriage which occurs when native traditions are blended in new and unusual ways. Immigrants from Mexico, Central and South America all have come to this country to work in the poultry plants, and with immigrants come the grocery stores that cater to them, spices that are indigenous, and restaurants that serve regional cuisine which blend produce and proteins that are readily available with new techniques. With the agricultural immigrant also came back the original corn and the techniques of the Native Americans in the form of masa, which is a field corn that is dried and turned into hominy. Masa is the main ingredient for most Latin cuisine. Tortillas, gorditas, tamales, jarachas, pupusas, all these are based on masa. And with the agricultural workers came the new dishes and ingredients that they brought with them. Moles, enchiladas, ceviches, pozole. These are just some of the culinary gifts from the men and women that came to pluck the almighty bird. With more products to experiment with came the chefs that use them. Not only use them, but actually need them to thrive and prosper with their craft. All urban points from New York to Washington funnel towards the shore as a summer playground. And with more people expecting to be fed, and fed well, I may add, came more chefs. And with more chefs came more demand and a hard push for more unusual types of farm-to-table organic and clean produce, as well as responsible animal husbandry. Breaking away from the traditional fried chicken houses and crab barns came chef pioneers like Matt Haley, Sidney Arts, Leo Medich. Organic farmers like Sue Ryan and Ted Wyckoff paved the way for the generations of newcomers like me to find an area verdant with culinary possibilities and the potential of growth in a direction that can only be imagined. It is the first sign of summer every year, the plowing of the fields that make way for the crops of corn, greeting you at every bend and long stretch of the road. Bright, shimmery, silver-green swords reach to the sky, growing varietals far different from 400 years ago. As high as your eye on the 4th of July, my children shout loudly as we wait behind each tractor. You can give it the barest seconds in a simmering pot, or slather it with Lewis Dairy Creamery butter, Sussex style, as I did when I was a child, or grill maíz esquites with cumin, chili, queso cuntillo, and lime as I do now. Just get ready to take the first bite. It's delicious out there.
Thanks, Gretchen. Find links to area farm stands where you can find the freshest food for your table on our website, delmarvaalmanac.com/living. This is the Delmarva Almanac. Now here's naturalist Jim Rapp to tell us everything we ever wanted to know about crabs.
No summer is complete without spending a few lazy evenings with friends and family sitting around a picnic table covered in newspaper with a hot, steamy bushel of Old Bay and vinegar-infused blue crabs in the middle. Eating a steamed blue crab is very much like a dissection exercise in a high school science lab. We rarely get as intimate with our food as we do when picking crabs, and you can learn a lot about crab anatomy during dinner. A live blue crab is actually dark olive green on top and white underneath. Their name comes from the bright blue color on their large claws. The dark green color changes to red when they are steamed due to the breakdown of pigment-protecting proteins in their shells. To get at the delicious meat inside of a hot red steamed crab, you must crack open the hard exoskeleton that protects the soft organs inside. The exoskeleton does not grow, so crabs shed, or molt, enabling the crab to grow as big as 10 inches across the shell. When molting, the crab's shell is squishy soft and they are vulnerable to predators, including other crabs and humans who eat soft-shell crabs. In the brackish waters of Delmarva, soft-shelled crabs hide in the aquatic grasses at the bottom of our bays until the shells harden. The upper shell is called the carapace. The belly has an abdomen or apron with a distinctive shape. If you know your Washington, D.C. landmarks, you can easily determine males from females. The apron on a male crab is shaped like the Pencil Straight Washington Monument, and the female has a rounded apron that looks like the Capitol Dome. The scientific name of the blue crab is Calanectes sapidus, which means beautiful swimmer that is savory. After you've separated the legs, claws, and carapace from the crab's body, you'll find the soft, fleshy parts protected by the hard exoskeleton. Gills help take up oxygen in the water, and the heart pumps oxygen-rich blood to the body tissues. The yellow substance, known as mustard, is the crab's hepatopancreas, the organ that filters impurities from the crab's blood. The white meat found in the interior chambers along the back and sides of the crab is the muscle that moves the claws and legs. The most prized meat, the jumbo lump, is the muscle that moves the powerful swimming legs. Each of these specialized adaptations helps the blue crab survive in our wild estuaries, where they are an important link in the food web. Blue crabs are both predator and prey. Their diet mostly consists of clams, which they dig up from the bay bottom and crack open with their claws. They also eat fish, worms, and crustaceans, including other blue crabs. Besides hungry humans, adult blue crabs are also eaten by fish, such as rockfish and red drum, birds, such as gulls and herons, and, as mentioned, other adult blue crabs. Newly hatched crabs are microscopic and are eaten by filter feeders such as clams, oysters, barnacles, and menhaden. Mating season for blue crabs living in Delmarva's bays runs from May to October. After mating, the female crab will migrate to the saltier waters at the mouth of the bay near the ocean. Egg fertilization can take 9 months after mating. After the eggs are fertilized, the female crab will develop an egg mass called a sponge under her dome-shaped apron. The sponge can contain 8 million eggs on a large female blue crab. Over a 2-week period, the The orange sponge will turn brown and then black as the crab larvae develop inside the eggs. When the water gets cold, most blue crabs will bury themselves in the muddy bottom of the bay. Adult females prefer the salty water of the lower bay, and males will winter in the deeper water of the upper bay. They remain mostly dormant from December through March and become more active as the water begins to warm in early spring. Callinectes sapidus is not the only crab in Delmarva's bays. The common spider crab looks similar to its namesake. It is a large, spindly-legged, sluggish crustacean that excels in camouflage. To blend in on the bay bottom, it covers its bumpy, spiny shell in algae, debris, and tiny living invertebrates to hide from predators. Spider crabs are one of the few bay species that is tolerant of polluted, low-oxygen water. Another aquatic crab in Delmarva's bays is the tiny black-fingered mud crab. It only grows to 1.5 inches long and prefers life on oyster reefs and under shells at bottoms of marshy creeks. Some invasive crabs are causing problems in our already stressed bays. Chinese mitten crabs have been introduced to Delmarva's waters from East Asia. Mitten crabs are named for their fuzzy-looking, white-tipped claws. The mitten crab was confirmed in the Chesapeake Bay in 2005 and became a concern to bay scientists due to their omnivorous diet and tolerance of fresh, brackish, and salty water, which can cause them to spread quickly and compete with native crabs and other animals. Our coastal salt and brackish marshes are teeming with small marsh crabs that live in the mud along the shoreline. Marsh crabs grow to just 1 inch long and live communally in interconnected watery burrows 25 to 30 inches deep in the mud. Three species of fiddler crabs colonize Delmarva's marshes, mudflats, and beaches. They only grow to 1.5 inches long, but the males have one enlarged claw that can grow to 2 inches long. The large claw is used to attract females, which the male does by waving and drumming it at the entrance to his burrow. Females' claws are equal in size. The most terrestrial of Delmarva's crustaceans is the Atlantic ghost crab. It lives along our wild beaches, where it scavenges mostly at night for decaying plants, insects, mole crabs, and turtle eggs and hatchlings. The ghost crab is sandy-colored and has a pair of white claws, making it almost invisible when standing still on the beach. They grow to 3 inches long and dig burrows in the sand up to 4 feet deep, where they seek shelter from the sun during the day. So remember, blue crabs and their cousins fulfill critical roles in the ecology of our bays, beaches, and marshes. Next time you're picking apart a pile of these savory, beautiful swimmers, think about their need, and ours, for clean, healthy bays that support crabs, communities, and commerce.
Thanks, Jim. Well, that's all for this edition of the Delmarva Almanac. Be sure to follow us on Facebook or Twitter, and next week join us to learn more about our local culture and get connected to our natural wonders. If you'd like to become an underwriter for this program, visit delmarvaalmanac.com/support. We'd like to thank our community partners, the Friends of Delmarva Public Radio, the Community Foundation of the Eastern Shore, and underwriters eatdrinkbyart.com for their help in bringing this program to you, our audience. Our theme music was provided by Brightside Studio. This show has been a Moonshell production. Thanks for listening. Until we meet again, may the rhythms and tides of Delmarva bring you good fortune.